Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Squawker Talker podcast. And in case you've been living under a rock for the last few days, you have missed a pretty incredible end to the transfer window. Cristiano Ronaldo, he is back in the Premier League after completing what is described as a Hollywood-style return to Manchester United. Antoine Griezmann has carried on his tennis between Barcelona and Madrid and Barcelona and Madrid by going back to Atletico Madrid, and the Premier League has casually dropped a cool, crisp £150 million just on deadline day. So, with records being absolutely smashed and a new and a few old faces lining up in new colours in the next few weeks, and here at the Squawker Talker podcast, we will be asking the question, is this the most bonkers, the most ridiculous transfer window ever? We're going to be taking a look at some of the figures behind this summer, who spent what and who's not spent anything in both the Premier League and right the way across Europe, looking at the moves and, more importantly, the drama behind what has been a crazy, crazy month for transfers. Right, that's all to come in part one of the show. And then in part two, we'll be getting the team's take on the big talking points from the windows, the signing of the window, the winners and the losers of the window, and who has picked themselves up the most underrated signing in August. Right then, let's get ourselves into it. As always, my name's Fergal Brennan, and joining me, we have Squawker's very own Mohamed Butt. Mo, how's things?
Things are, I'm recovering from yesterday, right? It was like, and just traumatic the last couple of days, like absolutely mad with deadline day. I'm writing this article, oh my God, everything's changed. I'm writing this article, oh my God, everything's changed. So, you know, dust is settling, internationals are here, which are weird and out of place this early in the season. But, you know, it's good. It's football.
Yeah. So, Mo, you're confused. And in an attempt into confusing myself, as I do love to do, we have another Mo on the show today. Mo Stewart of the Anfield Rap and Liverpool.com fame. Jake is away on international duty. So, Mo is joining us for the show today. Mo, how's things?
I'm all right, actually. I had a much calmer deadline day because I knew Liverpool weren't doing anything. So, I weren't going to be called in to do any emergency pods or emergency articles. But I've been enjoying football in general, and I've been enjoying getting back into proper football. Mo mentioned the internationals. I have the very similar feeling, in as much as it's not real. It doesn't really matter in the same way to me. So we've had some real big Premier League matches, obviously for Liverpool, the last one was Chelsea. And everyone is now obsessing about getting their ducks in a row ready for the big transfer push. But it's been an interesting summer across Europe. There's been lots of things, lots of trends that I haven't enjoyed, and lots of trends that I think are quite interesting to keep an eye on.
Right, Mo, I'm going to throw it back to you. Obviously, throw you in the deep end on your debut on the Squawker Talker. So we're going to talk numbers, number crunching based on the transfer deadline, and not just deadline day. There's been a wild amount of money that's been splashed around. Just looking at the Premier League as a standalone, £1.1 billion has been thrown out on transfers across the last 6 to 8 weeks. And you look at that as a figure and think, wow, that is an enormous amount of money. But it's actually reflective of a drop based on the last 2 to 3 seasons, 11% lower than last summer when it was 1.3, and then a further 21% from 2019 when it was ticking towards 1.5 billion. Still a massive amount of money that is being sloshed around when you look at the Premier League as a standalone example. And we're addressing this in the situation whereby, on the back of COVID, obviously there is issues in terms of football financing and clubs looking to pay for players. But based on those numbers, whilst there is a bit of a decline and a bit of a drop, the Premier League is certainly not skint.
No, and I think that was always going to be reflected. I think you're right to flag up the fact that the numbers have indeed dropped, and it's the second year in a row that they have dropped. And that is COVID having some effect. There have been some teams who've had to kind of shorten their horizons, or maybe not even shortening their horizons. Maybe it's more teams having to sell before they buy. But the thing with doing it that way is that those sales are still generating money. So the figure is still going up, even if clubs are having to do it in a more frugal fashion. But I think with most transfer windows that we see a big amount of money spent, there's always one or two kind of linchpin deals which end up being catalysts for others. And I think in England in particular, the deal for Jack Grealish was it. I think a lot of people were thinking it was going to be the deal for Harry Kane. But the way that Aston Villa went about that showed that not only were they confident that they could still survive and maybe even improve without him. But they knew it was coming. They had the plans in place. They knew exactly who they wanted and why they wanted them and how much it would cost them. And they got it done. And once someone has that much clarity of thought and decisiveness in the transfer window, all the other teams who are kind of sitting back and waiting, trying to hedge their bets on things, they then have to move. Because once one person's been decisive, it might be that there's a player on someone else's list who's come off the board. Then that club is like, okay, well, our number one guy's gone. We have to make sure we get our number two guy in case someone else is looking at him as well. So then that deal becomes made. And every time there's a deal, someone has to replace them. And that's how the flow comes. But one thing that has encouraged me about this, the numbers do look big. For the most part, the money is being recycled within the English pyramid. There are lots of teams who are in lower in the Premier League, higher in the Championship, who are receiving 15, 20 million, 30 million pound fees, which hopefully they will then be reflected further down the pyramid. And it will work in a way that helps everybody, as opposed to it being one big superstar fee and 25% of that goes to one agent and the rest of football just ends up standing and watching.
And looking at some of the numbers, you mentioned kind of a frugal approach there, which I think is the right way of looking at this. The fees and the amount of money that's been thrown out has dipped a little bit, but the amount of players coming into the Premier League is not. And again, when you compare it to 2020 and 2019, there's been an increase. 148 players came to a new Premier League club, whether that was internally within the English top flight or signed from outside of English football. That's a rise from 132 in 2020 and 128. What we've actually seen this summer is... We're going to talk about it obviously after the break with some clubs who've made an absolute mess of the transfer window, but you've also seen a lot of clubs going, we're not going to pay an absolute premium price for somebody if we can pay a little bit less and maybe get two players, get someone to back up another position within the squad. So we've seen more players move around this summer than the previous two summers. We've seen slightly less money spent. Is that kind of edging towards an overall more intelligent spending, a more measured spending, rather than just lashing out ridiculous sums than perhaps has been the case in the past?
Perhaps. I think it's going to be a case where clubs are going to have to pick either or. So you see Chelsea and Manchester City, they spent nearly £100 million on one player, both of them, but they've only brought in another couple. Well, City brought in, what, two for their youth team. Chelsea have loaned Sol Niguez. So it's gone for quality over quantity. And whereas other teams have tried to do different, there is one team, obviously, who we'll come on to later, who tried to have their cake and eat it and probably ended up with nothing. But I think it's a very much an admission by football teams that we can't just gamble the farm anymore. There is an arms race at the top, just as there always is. There's that the level of arms race to get into the out of the Championship, and then another one to get into European places, and then another one to get into the title contention. So the clubs who are competing at that level are all looking at each other and trying to stay ahead. So sometimes they can be more reactive, but what we aren't going to see is the kind of things where you get a team like Leeds of the old era, where their mismanagement led them into a horrible path, or thinking about someone like Fulham in a more recent era, who tried to spend at an aspirational level and weren't really kind of thinking about squads and how did they mesh together, and it ended up being a mess. So you've got clubs now who are looking at it thinking, we might have to budget in case we do get relegated, and also budget in case we don't.
I think Barcelona have been like the sort of perfect shining example of what is Leeds. They came very close to doing a Leeds, essentially. They vastly overspent over the last 5-6 years. They've been handing out massive contracts to players who are not worthy of those contracts, inflating the middle of their squad all the while, because they kept winning stuff, continuing to pay their superstars premium money, which, fair enough, they were earning. They were playing brilliantly. But then when you're doing that, you've got to then be a bit leaner in the middle of the squad, and they were just paying massive wages to everybody, which... their revenues kept spiraling up and up and up, so it was okay. They could hide the debt almost with the revenue, same way like Netflix loses loads of money, but they keep making loads of money, so people keep thinking, yeah, we'll just keep investing in Netflix. And then COVID created the Barca's income, And now it's like suddenly, oh my God, they've had to let the best player in the world go for nothing. They've had to basically give away Antoine Griezmann for half of what they got him. They're shedding salary like crazy just to be able to, people have to take wage cuts. So it's, they are one of the biggest clubs in the world, and it's a fantastic sort of like, don't mess around or that'll be you. And I think you've seen a lot of clubs sort of take heed of that warning. I mean, you know, there's a lot of clubs that have done a lot of good business this year without spending a lot on transfer fees. Now, wages are a different matter, but the transfer, you know, a lot of transfer fees have come down. A lot of clubs looking for free. There's a lot more loans. A lot people are operating more like the Serie A used to operate. You know, a lot of loans, loan to buys. You know, everyone used to mock Serie A for doing those deals. But look, it's a smart financial way to operate if you're trying to save money. So we're seeing more clubs embrace that, sort of with Barca being like the Icarus, you know, the shining example of what not to do. And even they're trying now to just sort of get over their own selves and like right the ship with some financial prudent spending and relying on the youth team and so on and so forth.
I love that analogy. I just have this image of Bartomeu flying too close to the sun. But you know, I think a lot of Barcelona fans would like to see him flying close to the sun, and obviously what would happen from that. Mo, before we look at kind of some of the stories and Ronaldo and Messi, I've got to ask you, brilliant comparison there with Barcelona and Leeds. Who is Barcelona's Seth Johnson? That's what I need to know. Before we move on, I have to ask.
Oh God, that's a great question. Sergio Roberto?
See,
maybe no, that doesn't work. I don't know. Ricky Pooch.
See, the answer for me has to be Pjanic.
Oh, God.
Pjanic. It's got to be the one where it's like, obviously this deal makes 100% sense at the time that we're doing it. And then it's literally weeks later that everyone's like, actually, maybe no, it doesn't make any sense at all.
And, yeah, there you go.
And then obviously he's going to become... Well, I thought at the time of the deal, his was going to be one of those where it's like, what was the worst deal that Barcelona did in this time? But then obviously, Antoine Griezmann decided he wanted to be the best at something, so he decided to be the best at that.
But the funniest thing is, Pjanic isn't even top three bad deals Barca have made under Bartomeu. That's the saddest thing. That's the saddest thing. But the way Barca have been run for last six, seven years has just been shocking. If Messi wasn't the greatest player in the world, Barca would have already been Leeds. That's the simplest fact that I can say.
But looking at the window, obviously we talked about, Mo, the numbers and the amount of money that's spent, the fact that it's dipped a little bit in the Premier League, and particularly when you compare it to Ligue 1, Bundesliga, Serie A and La Liga, it absolutely dwarfs it. Some of the numbers that we've mentioned about the Premier League, then in comparison to other leagues across Europe, is absolutely enormous. La Liga, 55 million, Serie A, 50, and Ligue 1, 15. I know, obviously, they brought in Ramos and Donnarumma and Messi. So, Mo, I want to ask you about the kind of narrative and some of the stories that are going around. Messi has gone to PSG, which is a sentence I still can't really believe that I'm saying. Cristiano Ronaldo has gone back to Manchester United. Obviously, Grealish has broken the transfer record. Romelu Lukaku has come back to the Premier League and back to Chelsea. So, when we look at how ridiculous and bonkers this transfer window is, you almost kind of have to ignore the money and look at the stories. Because in terms of stories and narratives, this has been absolutely insane.
Oh God, yeah. Like narrative wise, it's funny, really, and it's sort of in a way, it shows how weird and isolated the Premier League is from the rest of football right now. Because the Premier League's narratives are all like, oh, amazing romanticism. Ronaldo's coming home, although I'm pretty sure Manchester isn't Funchal in Madeira, and he spent more years playing for Real Madrid. But you know, you got to sell some papers, I guess. And then Romelu Lukaku's coming home, although again, it's West London and he was not very good at Chelsea the first time, and you know, but whatever, right? So, you know, the romanticism of these returns, right? It's huge. Jack Grealish, the local lad, the local hero, moving for the British transfer record fee to the best club in the country. That's beautiful. If Liverpool had signed anyone of any kind of forward, it would have been romanticism overdrive. But, you know, FSG, you know, they're a business, man. Those guys aren't about to spend any money when they don't want to spend any money. They need someone. They're waiting for Barcelona to get money again and buy their players for 200 million. And then they'll start spending money. But there's been so much romanticism in the Premier League, right? In the signings. But look at the rest of the league. It's basically misery, right? That Serie A, the Serie A champions went into liquidity, had to sell their best striker and their best wingback. They've done very well, actually. They had to lose their manager. They've done very well, actually. If you look at their window to recover from that, Dzeko for cheap. Çalhanoğlu, I think, for free. Denzel Dumfries for cheap. That's really... They've got a really nice little team there, despite losing Lukaku and Hakimi. But the fact that they had to lose Lukaku and Hakimi and Conte is just miserable, right? Juventus just entering rebuild, looking awful. You know, letting Ronaldo go for like what, 12 million, which is less than United paid for him the first time from Sporting, right? Milan are kind of, I mean, Milan bought Olivier Giroud, and I like Olivier Giroud, and he scored twice on his debut, good for him, but that's not an inspiring signing. You look at Bundesliga, did Bayern even sign? Oh, they signed Sabitzer from Leipzig. That's it, really. Nothing massive. Their standard predatory signing from the Bundesliga. You know, nothing major. You look at La Liga's a disaster. Like Real Madrid, oh, we're going to buy Mbappe, 200 million. No one believed for a single second they had 200 million. It was obvious they were bluffing. And PSG were like, no, we don't want your money. Go away. I mean, they should have just said, yeah, go on, give us the money then and see how Madrid actually did it. But PSG, you know, and Barcelona having to just fire sale everything that they didn't immediately love, you know, let the best player in the world go for free because they couldn't afford to keep him. That's football's dead, man. That's just it. The best player in the world left the club he's been at all his life and he didn't want to leave because they couldn't pay him. That's it. Football's over. That's not romantic. That's horrible. And then PSG stockpiling and amassing everybody, which is not romantic because it's PSG. If it had been Marseille doing it, you'd be like, oh, mate, love to see it. Lyon, you're like, oh, all right, get in there, lads. But it's PSG. Yeah, who loves PSG? Like, no one. PSG fans, and that's about it.
Yeah, and even then, they often fluctuate, I imagine. But it's funny because the whole thing with the thing that annoyed me the most about the European leagues in particular is you get two great stories. You have Lille winning the title with a great team full of smart signings where they've punched above their weight. Then you have Inter Milan who've knocked on the door for a couple of years. They've built their squad. They've got great partnerships all over the pitch. They've got a little bit of a loco manager, but he seems to be able to keep it together for one season. They finally did it. And there's two great stories, both of which got picked apart for financial reasons. It wasn't because someone decided they wanted to move on, or it wasn't because of anything football related. It was the two best teams, fair and square in that league, were getting weaker through no fault of their own. Well, no fault of the playing squad anyway. And I didn't like that, but you're right, Mo. I do think that Inter were able to really do well in terms of how they managed to manage it. But the drama of this transfer window for me is because of all of these different sagas. We've had the end of the era sagas where you have obviously Messi, Sergio Ramos, David Alaba at Bayern Munich, even Sergio Aguero at Man City kind of going off into the distance. Then you've got all of these like long-term rumoured sagas that finally reached a conclusion. I'm thinking Jadon Sancho, thinking Donnarumma, even Eduardo Camavinga, things like that. So all of these things that we've been thinking about or building up to for a long time, they all happened almost seemingly at once. So it's almost like there's a bit of a reset that's happened across Europe. And some clubs have decided that they're going to try and use this time to, you know, pick up a few bargains here and there. Some clubs have been like, okay, we're just going to sit back and see how it all shakes up. But it's really interesting to see how a lot of the big powers have all had potentially seismic moves happen and see how they all deal with them.
Yeah, you know what? You nailed that there. The end of an era. Do you know what it feels like? It feels like the end of season 5 of Game of Thrones when Arya gets on the boat and sails off. And basically all the plot threads or most of the plot threads that started in the first episode kind of wrapped up, and it show moved into a new phase, which is also when they moved beyond the books and when the show started getting rubbish. So it's like now you're worried about football's future. You're like, oh God, no. Because like you said, Messi at Barcelona, Ramos at Real Madrid, Varane at Real Madrid, you know, Alaba at Bayern Munich, all these long-running storied players, instead of seeing out the last years, they're moving at the end of their career. I mean, Varane and Alaba still have, they probably did have a move in them. But it's like you want to see people stay loyal to the club that they're at. And for various reasons, they didn't. And it feels like it is the end of an era. Messi has been at Barcelona. That's how you mark the era. Messi's been at Barcelona since 2004-05. 2004-05. Phil Foden was like two. Ramos has been at Real Madrid since the same time. I think Messi debuted the season before, or the same season as Ramos debuted for Real Madrid. Those two, at those clubs, the two biggest clubs in the world this century, and you know maybe even the last 30, 40 years, those two clubs Ramos and Messi have been at those two clubs. That's marked the era. Those two clubs have won everything. Four Champions Leagues for Real Madrid in that time. Three for Barca. Two trebles for Barca. All the league titles. All the best players in the world went through those two clubs. And they're both those two guys, symbolic captains, heroic captains, left for money reasons to PSG of all bloody places. And it's just, it feels like the end of an era. I'm not going to say it's the end of La Liga's dominance because I think Barca would just have such a massive profile that honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if next summer Barca get Haaland and Madrid get Mbappe and they just start up again. Frankly, it wouldn't surprise. I mean, look, you would look at Barca. Yeah. They've got the two best teenagers in the world, Ansu Fati and Pedri. They've got this amazing squad. Madrid just bought Camavinga. They're still great players. Benzema's one of the best forwards in the world. So I'm not saying it's the end of La Liga. I'm not predicting that doom. And by the way, Atletico Madrid quietly have gone and had themselves one hell of a window to build on already winning La Liga. Like, I think we're not ready for how good Rodrigo De Paul is going to be in Diego Simeone's system. Like, wow, that guy can dribble, that guy can tackle, that guy can pass. He's now in the perfect system for all of that. Griezmann has always been amazing for Atletico Madrid. So if he goes back with anything like the previous form, they're going to be scary. Watch out for them. I mean, Luis Suarez still can't score away from home in the Champions League, but Griezmann can. So let's see what happens with Atletico Madrid. They're going to be quite scary. They're probably going to win La Liga again. First time since 1951 they'll have retained it. But by and large, with the exception of Atletico Madrid, most of Europe, it's about the end of eras. It's this miserable sort of Game of Thrones season 5-esque. The only way from here is down feeling. Whereas in the Premier League, isolated by the money of the TV deal and whatever it is, it's all like, yeah, this is great. Ronaldo's back and Lukaku's back and Kane is staying and Grealish is gone. It's like everything except for one club, which we'll get onto later. It's just fantastic. Everyone's having a great time, you know, and it's funny to see like the way that the English Premier League isolated by the money of the TV deal has basically having a great time while the rest of Europe is kind of struggling, which is ironic because politically it's actually the opposite.
Yeah. And you get into situations where you find that like, people within the leagues try to almost come together and it matters almost more that, hey, the Premier League striking a blow against La Liga. So you get into situations where Barcelona allowing Messi to leave was potentially going to help Real Madrid bring in Mbappe. But because of, like you say, league status, because it's all driven by numbers now, it has to be more viewers in our league than their league. That means that we can afford more in the TV deals because the TV deals have become so central to the income of so many clubs because for English clubs, that's what's been the reliable factor that's allowed them to separate themselves from everybody else. So everybody else sees that as the most important thing. So we need to try and gain that. So the deals that Ligue 1 have been able to do for TV deals just because of Messi, has probably saved lots of teams in the league. So you get situations where Lionel Messi turns up for Rams for his first game and the Rams fans are applauding him louder than the PSG fans when he comes off the bench. He's like, thank you for saving our club, Lionel Messi, even though you're about to score four goals against us. And I don't like that as a trend, but I think it shows where we are in European football.
Yeah, right. So before we take a quick break, I'm going to get the bonkersicity scale, the measurements out. So Mo, I'm going to throw it back to you. Looking at this window as it is, the 2021-2022 window, a little bit less money, just, you know, a casual 1.1 billion has been spent just in the Premier League. We're edging up to 2 billion when you go right the way across the continent and you include all the other major European leagues. Has this been the most bonkers transfer window? When you throw in the narratives and you throw on just the absolute domino effect of all these huge players moving around, has this been the most bonkers transfer window ever?
Oh, God, yeah, without question. This is absolutely snookaloopy. Transfer windows are always a letdown. Like in terms of, like, you very rarely get really hype ones where loads of clubs... You'll get ones where one club makes really, just really good moves and has a really great summer, but you very rarely have like a period where that every club... he's doing some madness. And like every club, except for one in North London, does some incredible stuff. And every club, like this, like again, two of the, let's say, five greatest players of all time, including the greatest player of all time, have moved club in this transfer window. One of the most winningest, I hate that word, but one of the most winningest and dominant and mentally strong captains in the history of club Champions League football has moved transfers from a club if he'd been at 16 years. Like, this is absolutely, this window is beyond comparison. You could not have made it up. If I had told you at the start of the summer, Alaba's going to be at Real Madrid, Ramos is going to be at PSG, Messi's going to be at PSG, Donnarumma's going to win the Euros, then go to PSG, Ronaldo's going to come back to Man United, Lukaku's going to come back. You said, no, shut up. What are you doing? Is that a game of FM? No. It's completely beyond the scope of anything. You literally couldn't make it up. If you made up, someone would have laughed at you and said, no, get out of here. What are you doing?
Now, well, I tweeted in April that I thought it was going to be... Sorry, I tweeted in April that I thought it was going to be a shot boy summer because of all of these strikers potentially on the move. But I was kind of, you know, making fun of it. I think I named Aguero, Kane, Mbappe, Haaland, Lukaku, Depay, Messi, Werner. Nearly all of them moved. Like, I was joking. And literally the world of football decided to lose its mind. But the thing that makes it more crazy for me is not just about the moves. It's the amount of times that we were so 100% sure about something and then literally the next day, the complete opposite was true. Like, Gini Wijnaldum was definitely going to Barcelona. Then he wasn't going to Barcelona. Harry Kane was definitely going to Man City. Then he wasn't going to Man City. Ronaldo was definitely going to Man City. Then he wasn't going to Man City. Mbappe was going to go to Madrid. Then he wasn't. Then he was. Then he wasn't. And we didn't have time to fully digest the grandeur of any of those moves because they literally flipped on their head to hours later. So I don't remember a window where that happened that many times.
No, I agree. Yeah, I'm going to make it 3 votes for 3. I just think... Mo, I think you're absolutely right. As well as the money, it's these lack of certainty. Everyone likes to think that they know the score. No one likes to be an ITK, but everyone thinks, yeah, that's going to happen. That's going to happen. You can bet the house on that. That's definitely going to happen. And it's all proven to be absolute nonsense, which is one of the big reasons that we do love football. And I think probably the biggest takeaway from the transfer window is never, ever trust the words gentlemen's agreements. They've never meant anything, and we've all learned this summer that they definitely mean absolutely nothing. Right, guys, we're going to take a quick break on the Squawker Talker podcast. We've decided that 2021 has been the most bonkers summer for transfers. After the break, we're going to be getting into the details, talking about the best and the worst and the winners and the losers from the transfer window. The guys have got some brilliant shouts, so make sure you check it out. Hello and welcome back to the Squawker Talker weekly podcast, and today is all about the transfer window. The window is now slammed shut, the locks have been put on, nobody's opening again until January, and as we discussed before the break, it has been a roller coaster of a ride. £1.1 billion spent just in the Premier League and touching £2 billion right the way across Europe. So before the break, we had a little bit of a chat about the nonsense and the big moves and, you know, kind of the changes of narratives right the way across Europe as some major, major players moved on and legacies were kind of torn up and thrown in the bin, depending on which way you look at it. But we're now going to look at some of the big questions and the big moves that were made in and around deadline day. So we've got the guys to think about their best signings, their worst signings, who's had the best window, who's had the worst window. So we're going to throw it open and look at what has gone on. So Mo, we're going to go to you first and look at who has made the best signing right the way across Europe. It's open sesame to pick. But before we get into that, I just want to throw a couple more numbers around. So we've mentioned the overall money that's been spent in the Premier League. As it stands, Arsenal are the top spenders, £150 million that they've lashed out. Obviously, Jack Grealish has gone for the most money, £100 million to Manchester City. And the top selling club in the Premier League is Aston Villa. They've received £132 million. Now, I don't know if that's going to influence your choice at all, but I'm going to throw it back across to you. Who of all the clubs across Europe has made the best signing? Go.
I hate to say it, but it's PSG because, you know, they signed the best player in the world. it's that simple, for free at that, and on reduced wages as well, from what I understand. You know, the best player in the world does not transfer clubs. It so rarely happens. It's happened twice this century, and one of them was Messi. Before that, it was Zidane, 2001, when he went to Real Madrid. 778 games, 672 goals, 288 assists. Right? This guy was Barcelona. Wow. He's been the best player in the world since 2008-09. He took over in that season, completely took over in that season. Has been the best in the world ever since then. Maybe you would give Cristiano one little bit of an edge in the 2012-13 when Messi got injured. I think that was it. And Ronaldo had that hat trick against Sweden in the World Cup qualified playoff or whatever it was. Maybe that 1 year when Messi got injured, you'd say, okay, maybe Ronaldo. Or was it 13-14? One of those years, maybe you'd say, okay, fine. But with the exception of that 1 year, and even that was only because of injury, he's been the best in the world for 11 years. I mean, you know, he's phenomenal. He's even at 34, he's ridiculously good. Like you look, and you look back and you look at Barca getting eliminated from Champions League every time, right? And you think, oh, they haven't won Champions League since 2015. Look at all the eliminations, watch all the games, and you'll see Messi playing really well and his teammates just flapping around like a bunch of ducks. Look at Anfield, the biggest humiliation. I mean, yeah, I think the 4-0 Anfield is worse than the 8-2 because the 8-2 was just ridiculous. That was a broken team. 4-0 Anfield, right? Against a Liverpool team without Mohamed Salah, without Sadio Mane, right? He's thinking Messi's bottled it. He's been rubbish. Go back and watch the game. He creates three one-on-ones for Jordi Alba, Luis Suarez and Coutinho, right? One-on-one with Alisson. Easy chances. Alba, maybe not an easy chance because he's a left-back, but Suarez and Coutinho, easy chances for them to score. Barca score one goal, that game is over, right? The comeback is off. And then in the 8-2, he was pretty rubbish in the 8-2, but everyone was rubbish in the 8-2. Every time they get eliminated from Europe, even the Champions League against PSG last year, you know, he scores that storming goal. Missed the penalty and then scores that storming goal and creates how many chances for Dembele? For Dembele to miss? It's like, he's phenomenal. He's the best player in the world. And this is, PSG needed something like this as well, because what PSG don't have and what they've never really managed to get is a ball progressing midfielder. They've got Verratti as an organizer from deep, but there's no one in midfield that progresses the ball from midfield to attack to the final third. So Neymar, if you watch PSG, especially in Europe, Neymar starts the games on the halfway line. He picks the ball up on the halfway line from defenders and then runs through about half the team. By the time he gets to the box, he's exhausted. Against weaker teams, you can do this. You can do it. Against better teams, as we saw last season, it doesn't work. Man City shut him down, and Man City can't shut anybody down, right? So now you've got Messi starting attacks on the halfway line. Where's Neymar? Oh, Neymar's in the final third. Oh, but also there's Kylian Mbappe. Oh dear. What are you going to do now? Like, it's Messi assuming the main playmaker role of that team, which is what's going to happen because he's the best player in the world, is going to be huge because now Neymar is either going to start attacks in the final third. And Neymar that only has to run 12 yards, 30, 20 yards maximum, that's terrifying for opponents because he's now going to be much fitter, much more spry. He's going to be sharper in front of goal. And Kylian Mbappe is going to have literally the best supply line in the history of football right now. Well, not the history of football, but like in the modern history of football. Messi and Neymar supplying this guy chances. And Di Maria if he wants to play. Like, it's honestly what he does, what he adds to the team. Yes, defensively, they're going to have issues. They're going to require poor Gini Wijnaldum. Thought he was going Paris to play offensively like in the Netherlands. No, you're there to defend, Gini. Get defending.
No.
You know, poor guy's going to have his socks off. But you know what? We've seen for Liverpool, he's brilliant at that.
Yeah.
He's fantastic. Winning the ball back, 5 yard pass to a playmaker. All day, all night. He plays every single game, 90 minutes. He's phenomenal at that. He's perfect for what PSG need. Yeah, so they've made great signings by all across the board. Hakimi, Donnarumma, they've made great signings. Every single one of their signings is great. Nuno, the left back, Nuno Mendes, they signed. That's brilliant because they don't really have a left back. Every signing they've made has been good, but Messi is the best because he's the best player in the world. And he's going to make them better. So much better. And now the problem of Messi being let down by his teammates is much less likely to happen because his teammates are Neymar and Mbappe and Di Maria and Wijnaldum. And, you know, these guys are all clutch as hell. Mm. Hakimi. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's Messi. It's boring because it's like, obviously it's Messi, but it is obviously Messi.
I think that's 100% true. And I think the important part of that is that he is going to make them all better because sometimes you look at it and you think, oh, it's just fantasy football. You're just throwing three good players up top and expecting them to work it out. A lot of the time we've seen that it doesn't really work. But no, these three will really complement each other well. Obviously, Messi and Neymar know a lot about how each other want to play already. You've also got Di Maria, who knows all about how Messi wants to play from Argentina. And I think that when you put Mbappe in there, they can do it so everybody has their role and everybody gets to be elite in their role. Yeah. And it doesn't have to be, oh, I'm trying to do all this, you're trying to do all this. They can all shine together if they get it right. And Pochettino's a clever manager. You will expect that he will be able to find that way. I think when it comes to the Champions League and the higher stakes, a lot is going to have to depend upon where they are fitness-wise up against everyone else. And the simple fact is that to win the Champions League, you do require some luck. It does require some luck because there are always, every year, five teams at least who are good enough to win it. So in order for you to be one of the one and not one of the four, some luck has to come into it. But in terms of how they set up, in terms of what the rest of Ligue 1 is in for, boy, it's going to be worth watching.
I mean, Mbappe's cracking 50 goals this year for sure. He's going to be the main goal scorer. The only worry they're going to have, the only problem they might face is Ligue 1's defenders, who are brutal, notoriously tough tackling. They destroy Radamel Falcao. They routinely take Neymar to pieces. The stars aren't protected in Ligue 1 the same way they're protected in La Liga. That's the one issue. Messi's 34. He's resistant. He's very resilient against injury. He always has been since Guardiola showed up in 2008 and sorted out his diet before he was munching on pizza and drinking Coke. And, oh, wow, he's getting injured all the time. Wonder why. If he can resist the injury, that's going to be the main thing. But of course, the most absurd thing is they don't have to play him every week. They can rotate them. They've got four world-class players in attack, right? With Di Maria, Messi, Neymar, and Mbappe. They can rotate them. I mean, Mbappe will play most of them because he's young, but they can rotate them. One of them can get a rest one week. One of them can get a rest the other week. You can start one of them on the bench, bring one for 20 minutes. So even if they pick up little knocks here and there, they can afford to rest the little knocks so they don't become big knocks. And then obviously if you get a big freak injury, big tackle, you can't help that. But, that's their only weakness. But it's not even that much of a weakness, honestly. Mm. And of course, we're all ever looking at this is how good Hakimi is going to be for them on the right, just steaming down, being a right wing. He's already got like one assist, two assists in Liga. And Mbappe's already scored like two, three goals. Mm. They look, and that's before Messi's barely even played. And by the way, regarding chemistry, Messi and Mbappe, immediately Mbappe was looking for Messi all the time he had the ball on the debut, which is just like he was for Benzema. He's totally starstruck. He's like, he's completely in awe of him. He's passing him every chance he gets, just like he did with Benzema at the Euro. So Mbappe's not going to be a problem. None of them are going to. It's a phenomenal setup. It's really sad that it's PSG, obviously, with all the problems surrounding their owners. On the pitch, they're a great team. They're going to be a great team. It's going to be really something to watch.
Yeah. In terms of the window itself, Mo, we're going to go back across to you to look at this one. Mo's gone for Messi being the signing, joining PSG, slew of free transfers that's come into their club, and obviously they're now going to be under pressure to go and win the Champions League. That's objective number one for Mauricio Pochettino. But in terms of the window as a whole, I want you to give us your shout for which club has done the best work. Criteria obviously is mixed depending on who you ask. Maybe it's about retaining a player, maybe it's about buying a key target, strengthening in certain areas. So with that in mind, I'm going to pass this one over to you. Which club has had the best window across Europe this summer?
Well, PSG, for obvious reasons, are going to be up there. I think as we've mentioned, they've brought in good players, some of whom obviously they haven't had to pay a lot for, a couple of whom, particularly Hakimi, I've got the potential to be there for a long time. But I'm looking a little bit closer to home from the team who I think has won the window, because I think it's important we define what winning means for me. And I think it always should be the biggest problems that you have as a squad at the end of the last season. If you can solve those problems, then you've done well. If you can solve those problems cheaply, then you've done fantastic. If you solve those problems quickly, then you've done even better. And if you can bring in a mix of youth and experience, players who have the ability to go into the first team but can also be good quality backups if need be, then you've won the window. And I'm talking about Leicester City, who have done all of that in abundance. I was shocked at how quickly and easily they were able to get not only Patson Daka, but Boubacar Missomari, who anyone who saw Lille in Ligue 1 last season. Renato Sanchez did very well, but Somari was the guy who I was watching thinking, yes, this guy would suit Liverpool fantastically. There were lots of other clubs who were interested in him. But if you listen to him, he didn't care about anybody else. He had his mind set on Leicester because he knew that they would be the team who could give him what he needed. And obviously, he's big friends with Wesley Fofana, which didn't hurt. But when you look at who they've brought in, as I say, they've brought in Patson Daka, they've brought in Soumare, they've brought in Ademola Lookman, who's still young, got good Premier League quality, and finally is a real right wing option. They haven't really had since Mahrez left. Even if you think about they suffered that injury to Fofana late, well, relatively close to the season starting. They didn't hang about, straight into Southampton, 15 million for Vestergaard. Thank you very much. There's that whole field. And they brought in someone like Ryan Bertrand, again, a good mix of experience and youth, guys who know the league, guys who you can see fitting into their system. And they've done it all for less than 50 million quid. I just think that when you add all of those things together, they've done everything that they could possibly do. And the biggest thing, they haven't had to sacrifice one of their jewels to do it, as they have done every other season previously.
Yep.
They are at the point now where every team trying to get into the Champions League, they were at the point where everyone, all those teams want to be. Leicester have done it. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to get into the top four because, unfortunately for Leicester, those four teams above them are still all very good. But if you go into it thinking, okay, what could we do at the maximum to help ourselves? They've done it. They've got, I think Daka's going to be one of those guys who eventually, he can take his time getting up to speed, getting used to everything, and then kick on. He eventually is going to be the guy who replaces Vardy. But even though that he's a big money signing relatively, even though there were lots of other clubs looking at him, they're not under pressure to play him straight away because they've got Jamie Vardy and they've still got Kelechi Iheanacho, who was fantastic at the end of last season. And even with Soumare, they've got Wilfred Ndidi and they've got Youri Tielemans. So what they've got is they've got a set midfield who, in all circumstances, will be playing most of the big games. But what that means is that you've got Soumare who can come in. And the thing with Soumare, he is nominally a defensive midfielder, but he's very good with the ball as well. He can run with the ball.
He can dribble. He can dribble. Really dribble.
So you could play him alongside either of those two. And I always think people talk about big signings coming in, having big impacts. Those are the ones that we all remember. But the best way to do it is to allow someone to develop over time. If a signing's second season is better than their first season, that normally means they're going to have more good seasons. Obviously, Mo Salah is the exception that proves the rule. But I think if you're a football club and you're looking to build a core over years and years, doing it that way, the slow development is going to be so much better because there's less pressure on the guy, which means that if he doesn't click straight away, you haven't got to feel like, oh, I'm not sure if I can do it again because the pressure's on him too much. And then if he doesn't work, then we have to dump him and try and buy someone else. No, slow, steady development. Liverpool did it. Leicester are doing it. And I think it's going to pay off for them.
Yeah, massively so. Patson Daka is a great example. Like you said, Jamie Vardy, right? This is the thing. Jamie Vardy, last two seasons, his goal scoring after Christmas has fallen off a cliff. He's still bad goals. He's still got a few here and there, but he's had long goal droughts. He's not looked as good because he's 35, 34? He's an old guy now. He's a veteran, right? Patson Daka is not going to play well first off season. He's not going to play. He's still getting into the league, still adjusting, right? So like Mo says, you play Vardy, rinse him for half a season. Oh, Vardy's getting tired. Oh, Patson Daka's adapted now. In he comes, scoring goals, running in behind, just like Vardy does. And suddenly it's like Leicester haven't lost a step. And that's been what's knocked them out of the Champions League 2 years in a row. They've stumbled right at the last. They let Man United in, they let Liverpool in, because they stumble at the end. If they don't stumble at the end, I mean, look, again, anything can happen. But I agree. I think Leicester make it window. I think Barcelona have had a surprisingly, within context, a good window. Because the context being that they're broke and they have to sell everything. They have to let their best player go for free. And within context, they've actually done quite well because they've slashed their wage budget hugely, got rid of Griezmann and Messi, the two highest earners at the club. You don't want to lose Messi, but, whatever. And they've actually managed to retain, everyone was worried, how they're going to register their players and all that stuff. they're like, oh, is someone going to come in for Frenkie de Jong? Is someone going to come in for Pedri? They're going to have to sell one of the young studs of the team. No, they've gotten all their big stars, their big captains to take pay cuts, right? Piqué took a big one, obviously allowed them to register Memphis. They brought Memphis in, was already on a cheapish deal, and then he agreed to take a wage cut even on top of what he would already taken. So he's basically there playing for much less than he's worth because he loves Barcelona and he wants to be there, wants a chance at a big club again. You know, they've got the two best teenagers in the world, obviously. Luke de Jong is a bit of a strange one, honestly, but he does know Memphis Depay. He worked well with him at PSV. Mm. They scored loads of goals together. He's a good target man. He's got, if you look at his goals, he's not scored a lot for Sevilla, but he's scored against basically all the big clubs he's faced. Barca, Madrid, Atleti, Dortmund, mm. Man United, Inter Milan, two goals in Europa League final. So maybe he's a very good plan B. Maybe he's not the plan A. So within context of being broke and having to sell players, Barca have actually done very well to keep what is essentially a fairly competitive squad. I mean, as long as certain key individuals like Ronald Araujo, Frenkie de Jong, Busquets, Pedri and Memphis stay fit, they'll be all right. I mean, if you watch Griezmann at the start of the season, 3 games, no goals, no shots on target, no assists, no chances created. He was awful. They needed to get rid of him. I know reputation-wise, it looks ridiculous to get rid of him, but honestly, he was playing so poorly. It was like, he's one of the biggest flops of all time. Send him back like that, you let him play there. You know, the team is rolling around Memphis now. They've done well. Memphis is going to have a huge season, by the way. Watch out for him. He was putting out huge numbers last year in Liga. Very Messi-esque. He might well do that for Barca.
I mean, Barca's real problem when it comes to Griezmann is that they let him go back to Atletico. Like if they'd have sent him to somewhere else, it wouldn't have been quite as bad. But it's like, man, they really pulled your pants down and spanked you, didn't they? But the one thing I find interesting about Barcelona, yeah, and it is interesting that we are talking about them being able to register the players they actually signed as being successful. It's kind of a low bar. But what happens if some of those guys, the new players, don't start well? Obviously, Depay has done great, but that dressing room is going to be an interesting place if some of these guys is like, you've literally taken money out of my pocket, out of my children's mouths, and now you're going to sit here and you're not going to train your hardest.
Like, I mean, PK's married to Shakira. I think he's got plenty of money. But I see your point. That's what's interesting about Aguero, because Aguero can't even play till November. So that's going to be the very interesting one. Let's see what happens with him. I think, obviously, Memphis has started well. They've sold Emerson now, so they don't even have to worry about that. but now they might... I mean, Eric Garcia is the one, isn't it? Let's see how long it takes him to get up to speed. Didn't play for an entire season and looked really, really bad in the San Mamés against the Atlético Bilbao. But anyway, let's see.
I agree. I think Leicester's a fantastic shout. And I think reputationally, they've also won as well, because there was two ends to the Patson Daka deal. They've shown that they're not going to be bullied. There was talk of Bayern and Dortmund both being interested in him. They've shown that they can, you know, front up to these clubs and say, we can offer you a shot at the Champions League. We can offer you a big contract. We can offer you a place in the Premier League. And Mo, as you rightly said, we so often just pat these clubs on the head and say, yeah, but you know, if you want that, you're going to have to give us one of your good players. There wasn't a whisper about Tielemans or Ndidi. The minute the season finished, Rodgers just locked that down and said, they're not going anywhere. They're key to our plans and they want to play here. They want to play for Leicester City. So yeah, I think Leicester is a fantastic shout. Right, Mo, as in Mo Stewart, has been given the nice job of the good window. Who's won the window? We're going to give you the big bad wolf, the bad cop to his good cop. Who has had the worst window? I'm terrified about who this is going to be, because I think I might have guessed based on the big smile on your face.
Yeah.
But go on, give it to me. Who's had the worst window?
Look, when Roy Keane said, and speaking of Leicester, let's link it here. When Roy Keane said that James Maddison should not leave Leicester to Arsenal, because it's at best a sideways move. Frankly, it's a downways move. Everyone was like, what are you talking about? Arsenal massive club. Ian Wright took massive offence because Ian Wright loves Arsenal. And I love him for that. I love Ian Wright. I'm not going to badmouth Ian Wright. And I see why it would hurt to hear that. But it's true. Leicester are better than Arsenal right now. They have been better than Arsenal for 2 years, maybe even more. Leicester won a title in 2016. Arsenal last won a title in 2004. Leicester are a bigger club than Arsenal. It's these things. Look, Arsenal, Thierry Henry said it on Monday Night Football ages ago. What happened to Arsenal? They built their own they built a stadium and they built it with their own money, more or less, and paying for that stadium basically hamstrung them financially. Arsene Wenger's prudence hamstrung them financially, and Arsene Wenger's pragmatism that emerged, or sorry, the, the, the unshaking idealism that emerged after he pragmatically tried to win the Champions League 2006 by parking the bus and playing on the break, and it didn't work. So he was like, I'm never compromising again. And that was instilled into the club. So you signed just millions attacking midfielders, no defensive ones. And it just, you know, what nonsense. It's been building for a while. Mikel Arteta came in, looked really, really good at first. You're thinking, oh, I thought, I mean, look, you talked to Jake, you talked to anyone. I was a huge, huge Arteta. I was like, oh God, this guy's the one. They've found a real one here. He's a brilliant manager because he looked like a brilliant manager. And then what happened was it turns out he's a bit of a VS Boas. And he has great ideas and great tactics, but the players, he seems to fall out with them all the time. He can't seem to get on with the players. Mm. So anyway, it's all building to this, right? He wants backing. He wants to build a club. He wants to build a side in his honour. He's gotten rid of players he doesn't like, falling out with everybody, getting rid of them, but send them off to wherever. He wants his players. And Arsenal say, you know what? You can have your players. And they give him money. He spends £147.5 million, British pounds sterling, in this window. Who did he buy that was good? That was genuinely like, oh my God, he's great. Who does he buy that would make that any other club in the Premier League would have been like, yeah, you know what? Any other top club would be like, yeah, we want him. Maybe Ben White, and that's it. And even Ben White, no other top club went in for him. They got him unopposed. £50 million. And I like Ben White. I think he's great. I think he's a great dribbler. But Ben White plays in a back three. You want him for a back four. What are you doing, Mikel?
Mm.
Ben White dribbles out from the back in a back three. You don't put him in a back four. What, you're nullifying all his best attributes. What are you doing? Like, Nuno Tavares, I think Nuno Tavares is their most sensible signing. It sounds absurd because £6.8 million for a left-back because Kieran's made of glass. And whenever he doesn't play, he gets injured. They have to play Cedric at left-back, and that doesn't work. So I think Nuno Tavares is actually that's a good signing. But everything else, Sambi Lokonga, how good is Sambi Lokonga really? I like him. He's a good, hard-working player. Is he going to take you to the next level? No. Martin Odegaard, look, phenomenal talent. Looked great at Real Sociedad, has not looked great for anywhere else at a top level. Rubbish at Madrid every time he's been there. Underwhelming. Arsenal last year, I don't know why they were in such a mad rush to get him back. He clearly didn't even work last year. And worse still, his best position is the same one that Smith Rowe plays. And then Smith Rowe is one of the three good players Arsenal have with Saka and Tierney. That's consistent. So now you're signing someone to play his position? What are you doing? Just give you're giving him the ten shirt. Give him the reins. Ramsdale. I mean, what is going on with Ramsdale? I mean, I'm a big Emi Martinez fan. I still can't understand why they sold him over Bern Leno. I still don't understand that. But Ramsdale, look, he's supposed to be a really nice guy. And Sam Long, Squawkers of Sam Long, is a huge fan. So let's see. I hope he can come good. Maybe they're planning to take the number one shirt from Leno. I don't know. And then Takahiro Tomiyasu. Okay, he's good. Is he great? Again, all of these players, this is what I've said before. Arsenal have bought a Europa League squad on a Champions League budget. Mm-hmm. They've spent Champions League money on Europa League players. And that's never, ever, ever a recipe. This is we talked about Barcelona earlier, inflating their wage budget with these average players who they gave huge wages to. And it's like, that's what led to their downfall. This is what Arsenal have just done. They've spent the most money out of any club in this country. Man City spent £100 million on Jack Grealish. Arsenal outspent them. But who have Arsenal got that's anywhere near as good as Jack Grealish? No one. They've not got anyone that's close to as good as Romelu Lukaku or Cristiano Ronaldo or, God, Rafael Varane. I haven't mentioned him yet. He's literally the best defender in the world. It's absurd that Arsenal have gotten to this point. Well, I don't know what Edu and Arteta are doing because they've clearly been given the money. Everyone's asking them back. They've got to back the manager. They backed him. And he spent all their money on nonsense. It's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? They've had by far the worst window because other clubs have lost key players and not like Liverpool only signed one player and they needed to sign like three. And that's not a good window. But Liverpool have a great freaking team, man.
Yeah.
With the exception of their midfield, which is now looking a bit like they've got a great freaking team, right?
Yeah.
So they, you know, but Arsenal didn't have a great freaking team. Arsenal did not have a great team at all. And now they've just signed all this chaff that's just going to make them what? Like stay where they are? Are they even going to finish top seven? They might do. They've lost three games. Start the season, haven't scored a single goal. It, you know, look, I don't like Arsenal being terrible. Straight up. I don't like it. I like Arsenal. I think they're an old school club. My dad's an Arsenal fan. the romantic in me. I love the Man United Arsenal rivalry back in the day. That's fantastic. I don't want Arsenal to suck. I like Arsenal. I think they're more fun. Premier League's more fun when Arsenal are fun. But they are awful right now. They are down so bad. They are down so bad.
Yeah, I just think in terms of moves, it just smacks of desperation. Double relegated Aaron Ramsdale. Ben White was an interesting one. Liverpool were reportedly interesting. Klopp had a look. Didn't really make any more about it. Arsenal suddenly thought, yes, Liverpool don't want him. We'll buy him. How much do you want? Here, take everything we have. And then the situation with Odegaard, for me, it's as an Arsenal fan, it's the cherry on top of the cake because he clearly didn't want to come back. He was basically begged to stay in London. We'll negotiate a permanent deal from here. We'll get you to stay, blah, 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 blah. He didn't want to. He left. He went back to Madrid and he was probably willing to sit on the bench at Madrid rather than play at Arsenal. And Arteta still didn't take the hint. It's like when someone moves away from you on the bus and you're like, no, I'm not the problem. No, I'm not the problem. No, Arsenal Football Club are... Arsenal Football Club are the problem. Right, we're going to wrap up, Mo. We're going to throw it back to you. Under the radar signing. Now, obviously, there's been massive money. Grealish breaking records. Ronaldo, Lukaku back in the Premier League. Messi's been flagged up by Mo as the signing of the window. So we're going to go to you for someone who maybe isn't grabbing as many headlines as Mr. Messi or Mr. Ramos or Mr. Ronaldo. We're going to give you a pick right the way across Europe. Who are you going for as the best under the radar signing this summer?
Okay, first of all, I want to say that Arsenal are very lucky that they didn't get me to talk about them. we'll maybe save that for next time. It's tough because in the world of football, particularly European football, it's harder to find someone who's truly under the radar. Now you'll find kind of prospects who maybe have played 40 or 50 games suddenly becoming 15 to 20 million pound signings and then you find that everybody knows everything about this person. So it's tough. What I would say, again, is kind of keeping within the theme that we've run throughout this show, the fact that Barcelona are a dumpster fire. My underground signing, Francisco Trincao for Wolves. Ooh. They've managed to get a very, very, very exciting young player on loan with an option to buy for £25 million, by the way, which is an absolute steal. He is, he has everything to make exactly the same impact, if not a bigger impact, than Pedro Neto had, who he used to play with alongside Braga, and they used to absolutely tear the Portuguese defences up. So he already knows all about each other's game. They work well together. Obviously, they've got Jimenez back, so they've got a great striker to be able to feed off of these. But Trincao's one of those guys. He's the left footer who plays often on the right, and he likes coming in, but he's tricky. He's 21, but he's already played 150 senior games, including 40 games for Barcelona. He's going to be someone who, by January time, he's probably going to be linked with a £45 million move to Liverpool. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm over here just applauding. That's such a great shout. Honestly, I never understood why Trincao didn't make it get more games on Barcelona. You look at him, he's fast, he's tall, he's strong, he's tricky on the ball, and he's got a great shot on him. Yeah. The only issue at Barcelona was the confidence wasn't always there. Like to use his skill set, and I've been saying on Twitter, he's like this. You can't see me on long video, but hold on, I have to go. He's this close to being utterly unplayable because a player that's that big, that strong, that quick, and that skillful, if he has the confidence to use those skills, you can't stop him, right? He's stoked, and I mean, I can't really bastard the game up. I understand they need to raise money, and they are they are a dumpster fire. A flaming dumpster fire sailing down the river, right? Absolutely correct, 100%. And but I still can't for life means that you sell anyone but him. You keep that guy. You can develop that guy in your first team, especially if they knew they were planning to get rid of Messi and Griezmann. That right wing spot is right there now. I mean, they've got Yusuf Demir, who's this 18-year-old Austrian who could be really, really huge. But at the same time, Trincao, honestly, the potential for him. And in Wolves, you know, a club that generates confidence in players like we've never seen before, Adama Traore, as long as you know, I mean, maybe, okay, Nuno's not there anymore, but yeah. And what he says, the move to Liverpool, him playing for Klopp is terrifying because if one thing Klopp does better than anything else he does, is he makes players confident.
Yeah.
He makes players confident in themselves and their ability to play. and they play a ferocious 4-3-3, and they play right wingers that cut inside and score goals. If he goes to Liverpool, forget about it, man. Forget about it. It's over.
I think the interesting thing for me, though, is that Barcelona was so desperate to get him out or to get some money in that they were willing to put the option to buy at 25 in there.
Yeah, that's so low.
The reality is that once he has a season with Wolves, his value is going to skyrocket. And that 25 million is going to look like peanuts.
Oh, yeah.
I think you have to think about as well, obviously, Wolverhampton has become mini Portugal. So for a young player moving to a big league, it's going to be a real, real boon for him to have players who he can converse with, veterans like some Matinho and even Neves in terms of experience. But then his mate, Pedro Neto, Bruno Lage, the coach who knows him from Portugal. So the conditions for him to thrive are perfect. Wait, in fact, I'm calling it now. He is going to be the reason why Wolves finally decide to let Djamé Traoré go to Spurs. Because he's going to be... Traoré's going to be on the bench. Trincao's going to be on the pitch ripping it up. And then they're going to be like, okay, if you really want him for that much money, for £40 million, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm going to piggyback in on this one, the under-the-radar signing. So I've got a European one and a Premier League one. In Europe, I'm going from Rodrigo De Paul. We talked about him when we were prepping up for the show. I think Atletico Madrid have been perfectly happy to let this civil war go on at Barcelona, and Real Madrid claim they've got no money and then big bid for Kylian Mbappe. And Diego Simeone has Simeone'd it with De Paul. He was really impressive in the Copa America with Argentina. And I think Atletico Madrid have missed that style of player. We know as a midfield, they work really hard. They win a lot of ball, but there's so much pressure on Suarez's shoulders to squeeze the lemon and get another season of goals. Griezmann's going to play a similar way. He's going to be played up very, very high, looking to stretch teams as he did last time round at Atletico. What De Paul does is he provides that driving link, carries the ball from midfield, looks to create chances, and teams kind of work Atletico out to an extent when they look to defend against them. Marcos Llorente dropped in with quite a few goals last season, but ultimately you need someone through the middle of the pitch that can carry, that can link the play and look to give defences other issues. And then in a similar way, my shout for the Premier League is a similar style player to De Paul, but a bit more of a winger, and that's Brian Hill going to Tottenham. Obviously, Eric Lamela's gone the opposite direction, going to Sevilla. Yeah. A little bit of a kind of folklore legend amongst Tottenham fans, although opposition fans are not a big fan of him. But what Brian Hill will give Tottenham is a different outlet. We've seen now with Kane pulling deep and Son looking to go over the top, Tottenham play a lot in straight lines. I know that Nuno's trying to do things slightly differently than obviously Mourinho and then Ryan Mason did. But at the moment, teams know that if they can suffocate Kane and they've got a centre-back that can go stride for stride with Son, they do manage to nullify a lot of what Tottenham do in attack. What Brian Hill does, he is chalks on his boot, gets out wide, gets on the ball, skins people. Probably needs to put a little bit of muscle on him in the next couple of months. He needs to get fed up, bit of chicken, a few steaks, that kind of thing. But if you get the ball to him, particularly in the Premier League where defenders have this obsession with one-on-one and looking to get really, really tight, he can make an absolute fool out of defenders. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing him play. But unfortunately, he's going to be playing for Tottenham. So that's another little point of misery for Arsenal Football Club going into this season. Right. And on that miserable note, we're going to call it there. Mo and Mo, thanks so much for your time as always.
Enjoyed it. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah, man. Anytime. It's always good, you know. Love football.
Football, yes, we all love football. A little bit of an Alan Partridge moment there. Right, we are going to wrap it up definitely here on the Scorker Talker podcast. As always,
right?
Mo Partridge, as always, we're here every week with a brand new topic. Sometimes it's news that's bobbing around the Premier League at that moment, and sometimes, like it's been today, it's something a bit more bonkers. But we've decided 2021 is the year of the bonkers transfers. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you again very, very soon.